a Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On this week's Walnut Wednesday episode, Taylor Chalstrom has a report about updates to the federal marketing order rules governing inspection. He'll also have a report on the synergy that can be found between soil microbes and compost applications. A little bit later on, I'll bring you national agricultural news, and I'll get started with a look at regional agriculture news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In regional agricultural news and information from the United States Department of Agriculture National Agricultural Statistics Service, as of last week, average lows for California ranged from 14 to 56 degrees in the mountains. It was 32 to 71 degrees in the desert, and the range was 36 to 67 degrees along the coast and 40 to 63 in the valley. Average highs for the state ranged from 51 to 81 in the mountains, 53 to 99 along the coast, 68 to 100 in the desert, and 71 to 96 in the central valley. From the California Department of Water Resources, snowpack water content in the Northern Sierra was 3.90 inches compared to 12.50 inches this date last year. Central Sierra was 7.50 inches compared to 14.30 inches this date last year. Southern Sierra was 6 inches compared to 6.60 inches this date last year. California DWR CIMIS stations recorded 1,299 chill hours at Gerber, 1,205 chill hours at Williams, 1,282 chill hours at Holt, 1,554 chill hours at Merced, 1,311 chill hours at Fresno, and 1,102 chill hours at Arvin. As for fruit crops, some stone fruit orchards continue to bloom, again this as of the end of last week, while others have finished. Thinning was done for many of the stone fruit varieties. Cherries were steadily maturing. Due to dry temperatures experienced at the beginning of the year, cherry irrigation began in some areas of the state. Apricots, apples, pears, and prunes were leafing out. Spring for bloom thinning, fire blight, and scab took place for apples. Peach, plum, kiwi, and nectarine fruit development was ongoing. Grape bud break continued, and more young leaves emerged. Pomegranates were leafing and pruned where necessary. Persimmon and quince trees were budding. Olives were pruned. Valencia and navel oranges, tangelo, lemon, and mandarin harvests were underway. In some parts of the Tulare County, avocados were planted where citrus trees had been removed. Strawberry, blueberry, and blackberry maturation continued. Herbicide applications and fertilizing took place last week for nut crops. Almond bloom was nearly complete with some concerns of a decreased crop due to frost. Walnut tree budding and tasseling continued. And onions, sweet corn, and fava beans entered the early stage of the growing season. Leaf lettuce continued to grow while garlic emerged in Tulare County. In Imperial and Riverside counties, University of California Cooperative Extension faculty continued to develop research and extension programs focused on pest, disease management, and plant nutrient management in vegetable agroecosystems. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced it has awarded $99,998 in funding to an interdisciplinary student team at UC Berkeley for creating a new technology that removes arsenic from groundwater as part of the People, Prosperity, and Planet program. Arsenic is a naturally occurring mineral found in groundwater throughout the western United States, according to EPA Pacific Southwest Region Administrator Martha Guzman. She says she applauds the students at UC Berkeley for finding an innovative solution for removing high levels of arsenic from groundwater. Everyone should have access to safe and clean drinking water, she says. A group of students at the University of California, Berkeley, created a novel technology to remove high levels of arsenic from contaminated groundwater and is partnering with a local community in the Central Valley to field test this arsenic remediation technology. In the long term, this technology can reduce the number of arsenic-related diseases and increase economic prosperity in communities that currently rely on arsenic contaminated groundwater. Arsenic is a known carcinogen, and drinking high levels over many years can increase the chance of lung, bladder, and skin cancers, as well as heart disease, diabetes, and neurological damage. The regulatory maximum containment level for arsenic drinking drinking water is 10 parts per billion. EPA's P3 program is a two-phase research grant competition for college students that offers hands-on experience that brings their classroom learning to life while also allowing them to create tangible changes in their communities. The awardee has already completed phase one, which served as a proof of concept with a one-year grant of up to $25,000 to develop their idea. The team was then eligible to compete for a Phase 2 grant of up to $100,000 to implement their design in a real-world setting. California is entering the dry season with its water resources in a precarious position, having seen its driest start to the year on record. A heat wave last week sent temperatures soaring into the 90s and even triple digits in some locations as the paltry Sierra Nevada snowpack shrunk even further. Water and wildlife woes lie ahead for the nation's most populous state as spring runoff into reservoirs slows to a trickle and forests dry out unusually early in the year. While some mountain snow and valley rain is likely during the next 2 weeks, it will not be sufficient to pull the Golden State out of this deep rut, which is happening in the context of a longer-term climate change-related mega drought. The most recent snow survey, which I talked about a little bit earlier in this newscast, found that snow depth, in particular at Phillips Station near Lake Tahoe, was a mere 2.5 inches, with a snow water equivalent of 1 inch. The California Department of Food and Agriculture Office of Farm to Fork is currently accepting proposals for the 2022 California Nutrition Incentive Program. The intent of this request for proposals is to solicit project proposals that the CDFA F2F may combine into one California application for federal funding of up to $31 million through the USDA Nutrition Incentive Program. CNIP supports shoppers using nutrition benefits such as CalFresh by providing a dollar-for-dollar match for every benefit dollar spent on fruits and vegetables at participating sites. Its incentives enable benefit recipients to purchase nutritious, locally grown fresh fruits and vegetables for their families while supporting California farmers. For this request, CDFA F2F is seeking project proposals from qualified entities to distribute incentives at certified farmers markets, community-supported agricultural sites, farm stands, and small brick-and-mortar retailers throughout California. Applications must be submitted via email by May 16th at 6 p.m. Pacific time. For more information, visit the website at cafarmtofork.cdfa.ca.gov or call 916-654-0462.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
The California Walnut Board's Grades and Standards Committee began working with USDA in 2020 to update the Federal Marking Order rules governing inspection, looking into ways to remove redundancies and duplicative costs to bring more efficiency to the industry. This action resulted in USDA issuing a preliminary 6-month moratorium on the enforcement of the mandatory inspection requirement effective September 1st, 2021, which is expected to be extended until marketing order amendments are finalized.
We wanted to accomplish a couple things. We wanted to modify the outbound quality inspection system, the current system, and we wanted to find a new way to determine assessments that were required to keep the marketing order California Walnut Board ongoing activities funded.
That was Chuck Crane, Vice Chair of the Grades and Standards Committee. The committee has been meeting with staff on a regular basis to make decisions on how to evolve the order to ensure the new version will benefit the industry in a much stronger way. Crane noted how long overdue the evolution of this order is.
The current rules under the federal marketing order for walnuts mandate that all outbound walnut shipments are to be inspected by an entity overseen by USDA to make sure that all shipments meet USDA minimum standards. That requirement needed to be changed because the outbound standards are the original standards of the marketing order, which dates back to 1948, and those standards had become outdated. The current standards, as they stand now, allow for tolerances of defects that many buyers would not tolerate in their finished product. So that the suspension of that, basically allows us to, or allows processors to use their own in-house staff to, which is currently inspecting the product to a much higher standard to take over that that task. The proposed changes would basically suspend the mandatory need and allow the substitution of an alternate form of inspection. And I think, one of the main things we gain there is, reduction in the duplicity of inspecting.
A few of the drivers for change in the updates that will hopefully benefit the industry include keeping up with current market demands, saving resources, and increasing efficiencies.
With changes to the food industry driven by FSMA and other food safety initiatives over the years, walnut processors have had to build their own in-house quality control teams. The need to do this was to meet the continuously improving and higher quality standards being demanded by, some of the higher-end customers. The processor in-house tracking and inspection program is also a requirement for documentation, traceability, and to meet customer audits of our processes and facilities. It only makes sense to have the entire packing process standards controlled by the processor, keep the accountability all, in under one hat, so to speak. The streamlining of the process, will reduce the duplicity, as I indicated earlier, and that will reduce cost, which will result in higher grower returns, lower costs, like I said, more flexibility and higher, the cost will result in the higher grower return.
The Walnut Board and the Grades and Standards Committee is still actively working to update the order. As part of the process, the USDA will hold a hearing on April 19th and 20th of this month to discuss the recommended updates. Following the hearing, USDA will publish its recommended decision in the Federal Register for public review and comment, and then schedule a referendum, which will give growers an opportunity to vote on the proposed amendments to the marketing order. The vote will be managed by USDA and is anticipated to be held in the later part of the year.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, working together to advance the industry. Together, we can do more.
In national agricultural news, the White House has released its bipartisan infrastructure law rural playbook. It will help local, state, tribal, and territorial governments in rural areas unlock the benefits of investments in the national infrastructure. The president and other senior administration officials will also launch an infrastructure tour to directly engage rural communities across the country. The playbook provides rural communities with information on what, when, and where, and how to apply for funding under the law, so no lobbying is necessary to access it. The playbook also identifies over 100 programs funded under the law with federal cost share flexibilities and matching requirement waivers. Building a much better America requires that these funds reach rural areas that have been left behind for way too long, according to Mitch Landrieu, senior advisor and infrastructure implementation coordinator. He says that major investments are on the way. The goal is to make sure all Americans benefit from historic investments. A crop insurance fraud case totaling $40 million led to 23 people getting charged with a crime and 17 other people paying civil fines or penalties. DTN says the case began in 2014 at the USDA's Inspector General office when it received a phone tip about alleged fraud at Clay's Tobacco Warehouse in Mount Sterling, Kentucky. The defendants are accused of cheating a crop insurance program out of anywhere from under $10,000 to as much as millions of dollars. The most common scheme centered around farmers that raise good tobacco crops, but they worked with other insurance agents and adjusters to claim the crops got damaged by storms or pests. After the farmer filed an insurance claim and received payment, the insurance agent and adjusters got kickback payments. FBI investigators say farmers had help from several employees at Clay's Tobacco House, including one employee who was also a crop insurance agent. Last week, Growth Energy sent a letter to the Surface Transportation Board to talk about their concerns over significant delays in rail service. Those delays impacting the biofuel industry include empty car arrivals and extreme delays in the manifest and unit train traffic across the rail supply train. Growth Energy's membership ships nearly 70% of ethanol by rail through many key distribution points throughout North America. The organization says this disruption affects not only businesses, but American drivers, as it can ultimately mean less biofuel is available for blending. While they certainly understand that a variety of factors have contributed to the rail disruptions, the nation's railroads must do everything they can to ensure that critical fuel supplies each market as quickly as possible. That according to Growth Energy CEO Emily Score. She says it is essential that ethanol reach its destination to benefit American drivers facing high gas prices. Resources from the bipartisan infrastructure bill will help the government to carry out its long-range plan to reduce the risk of devastating wildfires. USA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Interior Secretary Dem Holland and USDA Forest Service Chief Randy Moore met with firefighters and fire management officials to get a briefing on the upcoming or ongoing fire season, but also
to highlight our collective efforts to protect our communities from the threat of wildfires.
Secretary Holland telling reporters on a Zoom call Monday that the bipartisan infrastructure bill has $14.5 billion for those efforts, and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told reporters,
"That's going to allow us to begin aggressively treating over 20 million acres of Forest Service lands and help treat another 30 million acres of non-Forest Service lands to reduce the risk of wildfires. That will provide an opportunity for folks to protect their communities and their homes and their lives."
And Vilsack said the infrastructure bill will allow the Forest Service to add, by the end of May, 1,500 additional full-time firefighters.
So that we're in a better position to be responsive to this very difficult fire year that's ahead of us.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Today's dairy farms look much different than they did a decade ago. With the pace of technology and scientific innovation, that is sure to be the case for the next 10 years as well. Thanks to leading research and technology, dairy farms from coast to coast are more efficient and productive than ever before. In fact, USDA reports milk production per cow has increased about 11.5% in the last decade. And the progress isn't slowing anytime soon. That according to Jason Osterstock, Vice President of Precision Animal Health for Zoetis.
We obviously recognize that innovation never stops. And so whether that's looking at new genetic predictions, new ways that we can use the information, new tools to help extract more value from it, those are all things that we work on every single day.
Partnering with Holstein Association USA, Zoetis has developed technology and resources over the years, including the Clarified Suite of Genomic Tests and Enlight Online Management Tool. Coming soon, registered Holstein breeders can look for new features with the Enlight 2.0 rollout.
We're continuing to do that collaboration across a wide range of areas and really excited about the introduction of Enlight 2.0. Which is a reinvigoration and additional functionality for that platform and ultimately helping producers extract more value from their investment in genetic testing.
The Clarified Plus genomic test introduced in 2016 is another groundbreaking technology that makes genetic predictions on health and wellness traits such as calf health, mortality risk, and reproductive traits.
We've been able to continue to stack new information into that product over time. And we recognize that selecting for a healthier animal that puts more milk in the tank for consumers to consume is really the goal of sustainable dairy farming. And for us, Clarified Plus really sits at the center of that discussion.
Sustainability, both for improving efficiencies and a dairy producer's bottom line.
As we look at our portfolio across genetic tests, therapeutics, vaccines, diagnostics, it's all about how do we help provide a comprehensive solution to address those challenges and ultimately create a profitable cow.
Learn more at dairywellness.com. During a visit to Iowa this week, President Joe Biden has announced an emergency waiver allowing year-round E15 sales intended to provide economic savings for consumers and a boost for America's corn farmers and rural communities. Additionally, the administration outlined new provisions, including proposed regulatory pathways for the use of canola in renewable diesel. National Farmers Union has long advocated for the increased use of biofuels based on economic and environmental benefits. NFU supports the decision as an immediate way for the administration to provide relief at the gas pump and increase America's energy independence, while noting use of higher ethanol blends of ethanol like E30 would add additional benefits to the economy, the environment, and America's farmers. It's widely accepted that ethanol provides an affordable, abundant, and renewable source of high-octane, low-carbon motor fuel. What hasn't been widely discussed is the fact that more ethanol means less reliance on foreign oil. That according to NFU President Rob LaRue.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Any type of farming that sources plant nutrients from carbon-bound materials like compost, for example, is uniquely positioned to improve crop yield by, quote, waking up the soil microbiome with a labeled food source. A well-fed and robust microbial community has the expanded potential to process inputs and can help ensure that the crop is getting the nutrients it needs to achieve unique yield and quality goals. Helier Ag's Dr. Carl Wyatt explained how compost and soil microbes can work together, with soil microbes releasing the nutrients given by compost and compost activating these microbes.
Compost is derived from plant and food waste, so it's a great circular economy to take some of these byproducts at the end of the season or at the end of the supply chain with the food waste and turn it into an amendment for crop production. So compost, of course, is when it's finished and when it's ready to go, lots of carbon in that material. So it's considered a bulk carbon source. And so you can actually use it to help amend your soil. And it works by feeding the microbes to some degree. And so you can get enhanced microbial activity. Those microbes help to stick the soil back together, which can help with improving soil structure and water holding capacity. On the other hand, these particles, the size of compost is quite large. So if you actually put it in your soil and you then allow it to decompose, you can actually open up your soil, open up pore space, which can help restore soil structure as well. So really, really nice soil amendment. The other benefit of compost, of course, are the nutrients that are attached to the compost itself. So the nitrogen, phosphate, and potassium, plus all your secondary nutrients and micronutrients. So you get this benefit of not only amending your soil, but fertilizing your soil with the same application.
This carbon to nitrogen ratio is important in compost, and there are certain mixes that can be added to compost piles to encourage the synergization of microbes and those carbon-based amendments.
Compost has a C to N ratio. That's how many carbons there are for every one nitrogen. So compost has a C to N ratio that tends to be a little bit higher in the double digits, depending on the source. Of course, there's lots of great UC Extension publications that can help you figure out the properties of your compost. If you are buying compost on the market, your compost provider should be able to give you that analysis to let you, here's the C to N ratio, here's the nitrogen, phosphate, and potassium in this compost per ton. So you can do all that math with the fertilizer math as well. But back to the question about the C to N ratio, compost tend to have a higher C to N ratio. That means they're a lower quality food source for microbes. And so that's one trick here that's worth talking about, because in order to unlock the nutrients in your compost, you need to feed the microbes. So that's where folks have been experimenting, adding food sources specifically for those microbes into the compost So that's a food source with a C to N ratio that's much lower. So a single digit, like a 7-to-1, an 8-to-1 product. And so they've been able to speed up that microbial activity and enhance the nutrient release from the compost itself, and then get all those other benefits I mentioned earlier as compost as a soil amendment.
Like most agricultural practices, there is an improper way to apply compost, and growers should take heed in certain situations.
Not knowing what you're putting out. So that's where that analysis comes into place. If you have a rate recommendation, you know, tons per acre, you should also be able to get an analysis of that material so you can actually calculate how many pounds of nitrogen are you putting out per acre, phosphate, potassium, and then the whole nutrient list that goes along with it. So getting that analysis done, getting a current analysis from your compost provider is very important, and that can help just help with some of this nutrient management challenges that we've come into out west, where we've had to pay a lot of attention about what we're putting on the field. Another challenge with compost, and depending on the source, is how much trash is in the compost. So I've heard reports of compost showing up to the farm or the ranch, and it's full of full of yard waste materials from municipal sources. So if that compost isn't clean, then the grower has to, on the back end, clean it up themselves. And that can be a very long and painful process. So make sure you have a look at that compost, you know, before you commit to it, and make sure that it's clean, free of trash, free of debris, and then it's as close to what you want to put out as possible. The final piece is some of the compost that maybe they rushed it through the production line too quickly and didn't let it mature as much as it should. And so if that happens, you can actually run a risk of applying a lot of viable weed seeds along with the compost. So the things that are just associated with compost production and some of these waste sources, the weed seeds can actually become a big deal if that compost isn't allowed to mature. Mature compost heats up, kills the weed seeds, and so you can put it down with confidence. But if it's not allowed to mature to that final temperature, you could be running the risk of applying weed seeds along with your compost. And then you'll have a whole other bunch of problems later on in the year once those weeds germinate and sprout.
In summary, weed seeds, trash in the compost, and knowing what's in the compost from a nutrient standpoint will help to apply a proper application. This is Taylor Charlstrom for MyAgLife.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our MyAgLife platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the MyAgLife Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.